105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Biz Connect, the bi-weekly radio show with myself, Martin White. Normally, I would have my co-host, Tracy Westall, in the studio with me, but Tracy is off working, helping set up a COVID testing centre at the moment. So, well done, Tracy, for doing your bit. But I have got another fabulous co-host with me today in the form of Ben Sherrard from Kent County Council. Ben, lovely to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. And just well done to Tracy, because we've been setting up some of those testing centres as well at KCC. So good on you, Tracy. Well done.
Brilliant. We've also got two other guests with us today. We've got Malcolm Clark, who is the Managing Director from Baxels Construction, and also John Reed, who is the Operations Manager at DDS Groundworks and Civils. So we've got a packed show. It's obviously very much a construction-themed show today. But I think what we'll do first is we'll play a little bit of music, and then we'll come straight back and we'll talk to Ben. So join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I've got Ben Sherrard with me today, who is the Programme Manager for Capital Project Delivery at Kent County Council. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hi, Martin. Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you with us today. Now, I know you're a bit of a sort of an old hand when it comes to broadcasting, because you run a golfing podcast, don't you?
I do, yeah, with my brother Tom, who I would say out of the two of us is a much better golfer. I think I'm the better podcaster, but he's the better golfer. So,
well, I'm incredibly lucky to have you a professional, a true professional in the studio with me today.
Oh,
not that Tracy isn't, obviously. But Ben, just by way of an introduction, just tell us a little bit about the size of the property portfolio that KCC have to kind of manage on an annual basis.
Sure, absolutely. So I think people would be surprised to learn just quite how big a landlord KCC is. So there's a property portfolio of sort of just around £2 billion worth of property across the county. And that, you know, serves as quite an important revenue stream for the council as well, which then, you know, in turn gets reinvested into sort of frontline services, maintenance of the buildings themselves. And that's where I kind of step in. So my responsibility is primarily with school buildings around the county, looking at, okay, we've got X number additional pupils coming through the system. We need to make, you know, additional accommodation for them, make sure everyone's got a school place that they need. And so that's part of my role, is making sure that we're expanding schools or building new ones to meet that need. And that's a huge program of work for myself and the team I work with.
Absolutely. And I guess ultimately most communities are growing in the UK, but has there been a sort of more of a growth in Kent, for example? Are more people moving to Kent, in other words, and therefore the pressure on the infrastructure is greater?
Absolutely. I mean, Kent's a really lovely place to live. So yeah, absolutely. You're seeing a lot of people move into the area. And I think, you know, that possibly may continue. Look at what's going on at the moment. Look at the way the workplace is changing. I think one of the big challenges, you know, in the upcoming years is going to be, you know, people who realise they don't need to live in London to work in London anymore. So, you know, they're going to be raising families away from the workplace more. And that's something that I think could be quite a challenge as we move forward.
And, I mean, there's obviously in the background, we've got the government's kind of stated objective as well of building, is it 300,000 new homes annually?
Yep.
I think that's been an objective that they've had for a couple of years now. I'm not sure they've actually met that target at any point yet. But nevertheless, there is that in the background. And, I mean, where I live in Thanet, there's a huge development about to start at Birchington, I think it is.
Yep.
About 1,600 homes there. And so, obviously, you know, the people moving into that area are going to need schools, they're going to need shops, they're going to need roads, they're going to need all of the infrastructure that goes with it.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I remember a statistic from, it's a few years old now, but just to do with the fact that people were sort of living longer and to do with the divorce rate, you needed a 19% growth in the housing stock. And that was sort of a flat rate. That,
wow.
Not even taking into account people moving around the country or moving into the country. So, I think, you know, we are, it is very easy to sometimes demonise the house building industry. It's a massively important part of the economy. But also what you don't tend to realise is the facilities and the contribution that local communities receive from housing development, and good housing development can actually serve to improve and contribute to a community rather than sort of detract through, you know, longer waiting times at the GP, less space in the schools, busier roads. Actually, you know, development and construction as a whole can really serve to boost local communities and local economies.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think it doesn't always get a good press. I mean, the Birchington development is a good case in point. I think it's being built on farmland, and a lot of people say, you know, well, you know, surely we should be looking to develop brownfield sites first before we, you know, before we build on important farmland. What's your kind of view on that? I guess it's just not always practical, is it, to find a brownfield site that's big enough to take a development of that scale?
You're absolutely right. And I think the problem you often come up against with brownfield sites is, they're typically in areas where there have been previous uses, so you don't necessarily know sort of what already exists there, what you're taking away to put something else there. You know, I know that's going to be an issue wherever you are, but you know, a lot of brownfield sites are places where you're going to need, you know, development for employment. You know, houses are one thing, but you're going to need all these other facilities, and I think brownfield sites are typically located in, you know, busier centres, you know, slightly more populous areas. They're going to be where you put all the other facilities that the people moving into these houses are going to need.
Supermarkets, all of that
absolutely.
Kind of infrastructure.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. It's good. Good point. Yeah. So today is very much about sort of collaboration in the construction industry, and we've got another couple of guests with us on the show today. We've got Baxel, who are a main contractor in Kent, and we also have DDS Group. And you've recently you've kind of collaborated very much on a schools project in Lenham, I believe. So just give us a quick outline of what that project was, really, just to give us a flavour for the type of work you get involved with.
Sure, absolutely. So we just spoke about house building. Lenham is situated in the borough of Maidstone, but there's been quite a lot of development around Lenham in previous years, and in neighbouring Harwich as well. And as a result of some of that development, it was clear that we needed some additional school capacity in the area. So the Lenham School took on a project to expand the Lenham School, provide some more accommodation there. Baxels were the chosen contractor, and sort of they got DDS on board because there was a little bit of demolition required of some existing facilities, and it was a fantastic project. Really, no project is smooth sailing the whole way through. The only thing every project has in common is they don't go to plan.
But I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, it construction is one of the kind of the industry sectors, if you like, along with retail, that's been able to kind of continue and still kind of play that very important role in the economy. So, but I would imagine, you know, running construction sites under COVID restrictions hasn't been an easy thing to do.
Hey, try putting up scaffolding at 2 meter distances. It gets tricky. So you're absolutely right. I mean, COVID has had a massive impact on our program of work, undoubtedly. But any success that we have had, and I feel we've had a great deal of success throughout the pandemic so far, any measure of success we've had has been down to the way we have worked with our supply chain. You're not the first person I'd have said it to. The communication between Kent County Council's client, the supply chain, the contractors, and the end users. You know, there's always a service or a school or some community facility at the end of the process. And the communication, the way we have worked together throughout the pandemic, has really, really been fantastic. And we could not have succeeded without that collaboration. It would not have happened.
It's weird, isn't it, because, you know, we've all had to get used to a new way of doing business, but actually, you know, a lot of the technology that's facilitated that on a day-to-day basis was kind of there before. We just weren't necessarily using it, and I guess construction's a great example, isn't it? You know, whereas previously you might have waited for the client to come on site to approve something, you know, now you can actually just do that via a Teams call or some kind of live feed from the site, and it can just happen much more readily.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at sort of the old world ways of doing sort of valuations on site, and it would require a team of people to go and have a walk round and take measurements and all sort of that. Whereas now you're using technology to really make the process a lot smoother.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny how you can see opportunities emerging from times of crisis, and actually the way we work, I think, will not go back to the way it was.
No.
Some of that will be a real positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Well, look, Ben, I think what we'll do now is we're going to play a little bit more music, and then we'll in part two, we'll talk a little bit about the challenge of meeting zero net carbon by 2050 and kind of Boris's phrase of building back green. And we'll get into some of those kind of questions and issues, if you like, with regards to the construction industry. So, yeah, we'll play a little bit of music, but join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back again, everybody. I've got Ben Sherrard with me today, who is the Programme Manager for Capital Project Delivery at Kent County Council. And Ben's team look after a budget in excess of £250 million as a schools investment programme alone on an annual basis. So it's great to have you with us today, Ben. What I wanted to do now was just kind of talk a little bit about the challenge of zero net carbon by 2050 and how you see that affecting the work that you do in that very important area of you know, school infrastructure, for example, and buildings more generally. I guess, you know, we've touched on the fact that the council have got a massive property portfolio and the challenge of kind of making those buildings greener moving forward. So where are we at the moment?
Well, I mean, at the moment, you know, as with everyone, I think the world has been understandably distracted. So the pressure on the front line, I would say, is off a little bit as we focus on more immediate concerns. However, I think you're going to see it come back as a priority moving forward. Mm. Personally, I believe it has to. There's no getting away from it. I would say, you know, we've heard a lot of very ambitious announcements from central government.
Mm.
A lot of the delivery behind that announcement has to come from local communities, local authorities. That's, you know, that's where a lot of the delivery, a lot of the success will come from.
Mm.
And we mentioned in the last segment, you know, the scale of the portfolio that Kent County Council has. You know, if you start looking at green initiatives within a portfolio that size, then you can start to affect some real change.
Yes.
I think where the thought really needs to come into it, though, and I'm talking specifically about schools here, is it's all very well implementing and sort of designing and constructing buildings with a really kind of with some really high green credentials. What you're going to have, though, when people like myself and, you know, we're going to talk to Malcolm from Baxels in a minute, people like myself and Malcolm walk away from the job, you're left with a group of people who care very passionately about education trying to run and maintain a very sophisticated building. And particularly you look at some of the primary schools around the county, a lot of caretakers are going to be sort of sometimes, you know, volunteers from the local community who are now faced with the obligation and the responsibility of a very kind of, you know, high-tech system of running a building.
Mm.
And that's a challenge.
Mm.
It's also a cost.
Mm.
So I think there needs to be a great deal of thought, not just around how you design and implement these, but how you maintain them effectively.
Mm.
Because the last thing that I, you know, my team and I want to be doing, or the KCC want to be doing, is saddling schools with, you know,
future problems, I guess.
Unaffordable revenue bills to maintain these. So there's a lot of thought got to go in very carefully about how we, the solutions are there,
yeah,
and you'll get there by everyone working together and talking about these things sensibly. But you don't want to sort of start causing problems for, you know, the people who are effectively trying to educate our kids.
Yes.
You know, you don't want to cause them any additional problems.
Yes, because if there's one thing that schools have to have, it's longevity, isn't it? I mean, it's very difficult to, you know, to conduct maintenance in schools when they're open for most of the year. You get a kind of small window in the summer, I guess.
Absolutely.
That's about it, isn't it?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. The school timetable, you know, they're not going to move their exam period because I've got to knock a few windows in. You know, that's, you know.
So in terms of, you know, when you guys put projects out to tender, is that becoming more of an integral part of the tender process now? Are you looking to build in sustainability credentials, you know, in terms of the response to tender?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, first and foremost, you know, we're spending public money. Mm. So we're not necessarily after the cheapest solution. We're after what's called the most economically advantageous solution. So which tender is giving us the most bang for our buck, essentially, is what we're after.
Mm-hmm.
And typically we're very focused on the quality of the accommodation for the pupils.
Mm-hmm.
That's primarily where our focus mm-hmm. is. But what we are seeing now in our tender documentation is a move towards asking what you would call kind of the added bonus. And at the moment, I think the green agenda is still seen as the added bonus. What can you give us above and beyond that sets you apart from others? What I think you will begin to start to see is that green agenda become a much more integral part rather than an added bonus. And I think that's where we need to get to really see some success.
Mm.
We're seeing it come in now with some forward thinking from places like the Kent County Council planning team, who are talking to us about, you know, PV panels on school roofs, who are talking about, you know, you've got to provide X number of additional car parking spaces, so why not have 10% of them electrical car charging points? Again, the point I made previously about the maintenance and the upkeep, that still stands, but you are beginning to see these conversations really happen and you're beginning to see them affect real change on projects that myself and my team are working on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's...
And how are main contractors, you know, working with that? Are you starting to see, you know, more openness and more kind of engagement from them as well? Because traditionally, you know, as you said, that wouldn't necessarily have been a priority. It was much more about, you know, cost and function and, you know, end user kind of experience. But now I guess they're having to kind of adapt as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I think, you know, first and foremost, you know, contractors are people too. We should always remember that.
Mm.
And, you know, they're living on the same planet we are. So a lot of them have individually the same concerns that you and I are discussing.
Yeah.
And you are beginning to see that creep through in what we're putting out, but also what we're getting back as well.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of underlying issue sort of permeates through all sides of it. I think that's really important. It's not just coming from us.
Yeah.
It's coming from all sides. I think that's what leaves me, you know, quite hopeful that we are going to see some pretty impressive stuff.
And I think the key to all of this, and I think Boris, you know, nailed it when he said, you know, yes, we need to build back greener. But what he's looking for is, yes, the government have a role to play in terms of setting the agenda, but he's very much looking to private enterprise to pick that up and now run with it. You know, so a £1 investment from the government, for example, will be matched by a £10 investment in the private sector. And I think that's the key, isn't it? And it's like everything, you know, once consumers and once customers are offered you know, alternative solutions and products and services, then, you know, we will adopt them, but they need to be there in the first place, you know. And I mean, Apple are a great example of that. You know, they've always been a business, I think, that's kind of innovated and brought innovation to the marketplace. And, you know, I mean, nobody knew about you know, iPods and iPads before Apple kind of put them, you know, in our laps, sort of thing. So and that's what needs to happen, I think, now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Henry Ford, you know. If you know, I'd have built, you know, asked people what they wanted, they'd have said a faster horse. Well, I gave you a car. It's exactly that kind of thing.
It is, isn't it?
I think you know, I don't think you're ever going to have a Conservative government try and tell people what to do. They're more going to try and, you know, let the market market yes. dictate.
Yes.
And I think what you're seeing is space being created mm-hmm. for some of that innovation, some of the private sector to step up and say, well, we've got a better way of doing
yes.
this.
Yeah.
And this is what it, and by the way, it's yeah. good, you know, it's yeah. good green, it's good yeah. for the planet, yeah. you know, it's environmentally friendly. That's, and it's going to take forward thinking, creative
yeah.
Individuals in the private sector to really grab hold of this opportunity, because that's what it is.
Yeah,
you know, it is an opportunity. A lot of yes. people may still see it as, you know, a cross to bear, an additional burden, something else they've got to factor in. If you flip your thinking and think about, no, I can really make something of this. I can, you know, make positive change, but I can also bring in opportunities for yeah. my organisation,
yeah.
then you're going to see some interesting stuff.
And that's the key, isn't it? You know, there has to be a commercial win there as well, you know, on the part of the manufacturer or the service provider or
absolutely.
Or whatever. So, yeah, that's a really good point. Excellent. Well, look, Ben, I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit more music, and then I think it's time to get Malcolm Clark on from Baxels to tell us a little bit about his side of the construction industry and how it works as a main contractor.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm delighted to say that for the second part of the show now, we've got Malcolm Clark with us, who is the Managing Director of Baxel Construction in Kent. Malcolm, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning.
Fantastic to have you with us today. Malcolm, could you just set things up for us a little bit? Tell us a little bit about Baxel Construction, what you do, the types of kind of projects that you get involved with, if you can.
How long have you got? We've been, as a business, going for some nearly 60 years now, based in Paddock Wood, working across London and the South East, doing a lot of work in both private and public sector around schools, community centres, commercial, industrial, house building, but tending to be on the high quality end rather than the general house building, although that's beginning to evolve and change, which I'm sure we'll come on to. Mm. Varying size projects up to sort of 15 million plus, but been around for quite a while now, but looking as a business to develop and move on in this new world that we're facing.
Yeah, fantastic. Ben and I were talking in the first part of the show about the government's new homes target annually of 300,000. What's your view on that, Malcolm, in terms of the feasibility of that? They don't seem to have actually delivered on that target at any point yet, but how kind of feasible is that, do you think, as a number, you know, as a stick in the sand?
Yeah, there's two issues around that. One is the industry's capacity to be able to deliver that number of houses, bearing in mind that the majority of the house building sector are developers as well, so therefore they're dictating price by supply and demand. Mm. So the big drive, which is beginning to be talked about and is beginning to happen in some areas, more than others, is for local authorities to take control of some of their housing stock and to drive that through. So you've got that potential change there. What was interesting for prior to COVID is that there was a concern that the industry at large wouldn't be able to deal with that sort of number, and that we hadn't got the resources in place. But the whole world turned on its head with COVID and what's going on. Mm. The targets aren't being met by any means. But I think there needs to be a new approach, and it needs to be much more local authority driven, in my view.
Mm. That's interesting, because, you know, Boris is, you know, in his speech before Christmas, I think it was in October, he was talking about, you know, building back greener, building back better, building back faster, I think was something that I took out of that, in terms of making planning applications easier, making the whole process easier. Is that something that you've started to sort of see filter in yet, or what, you know, what does that actually mean from your point of view?
Well, this has been talked about for not just since COVID. This has been talked about for some years, and it's been a real struggle to get those efficiencies into the system, both from a planning point of view, but also just for the techniques and the quality of the house building that's being acceptable. But I think that's beginning to change. the process of planning and taking that through is being recognised as has to change, and maybe COVID is helping us to do that. But also on the quality of what's being built up until recent years, that's also under massive scrutiny, particularly around where you've had the things like Grenfell, and there are all sorts of other issues with poor quality housing, and people haven't been very happy at all. And that also then links with how do we build greener and more efficiently. And when you start to look at all those aspects, you can really start to see how you could make some positive change. But you need an industry that's behind that. But even more importantly, you need procurers and local authorities that also are driven to hit carbon targets, better quality targets, safer targets, perhaps by more regulation, as much as some people don't like to hear that.
We are living in an interesting time, aren't we? Because I think, you know, in terms of economic projections, I think, you know, the kind of current thinking is that we'll be back in a recession-type scenario, you know, at the end of this first quarter, and you know, for obvious reasons. But in terms of construction, you know, normally in times of recession, you guys are, you take the first hit, and you take a big hit quite often. But this time round, obviously, you're one of the, you know, the industry sectors that's still very much open for business, and actually the reverse is true. But I would imagine it's not all a bed of roses, is it? I mean, you've had some fairly serious challenges, I guess, that you've had to kind of and barriers that you've had to overcome in order to continue to operate as a COVID safe business. So how have Baxel's gone about doing that and facilitating that?
You're absolutely right. I mean, I've been through a few recessions in my my career, and this just doesn't it doesn't make any sense. Mm. It's not, there isn't a template for what's going on at the moment, and we were sort of heading towards a recession, partly because of the uncertainty initially politically, and then Brexit and all the bits that came around that, and then COVID came along, and it sort of bizarrely turned what was heading towards a recession into a bit of a, dare I say, boom for construction. That's not quite right, because the amount of output has dropped, although it's recovered quite strongly between lockdowns. The positive for us has been, and as a company, we were very much digitally enabled. We've been working in BIM and working remotely for some time. So when COVID hit, it was actually quite easy for us initially to keep everything going. What kicked us initially was actually the furlough scheme, believe it or not, where people were furloughing drivers and manufacturing was stopping, and so therefore our supply of materials was reduced. But the actual operations of the sites, once we put in very quickly the social distancing measures, temperature checks, cleaning regimes, and then replanning and rethinking the way that the sites were operated. I mean, one of the things that I've banged on about for years with all my guys is last planner, and being much more efficient in the way that they program the work and the people coming through the process. And of course, all of a sudden, literally overnight, where you couldn't have eight people in the same room, you literally were having two people move in, move on, and get and much more efficiently. And so they're now all realizing that actually better planning is better performance. Mm. And I think that's been really good for the industry. Mm. And I really hope that will be maintained going forward. And we'll be cutting out some of the waste that was inherent in the way that we all operate.
Yeah. So, Malcolm, I'm sort of sitting here kind of client-side as Kent County Council, and sort of trying to put together the sort of challenge that I'm setting you at Baxel's and other contractors out there. And essentially, I'm after a high quality building. I'm after a bit of green initiative in there. I want it on time. I'm demanding that your sites are COVID safe, and I want a deal on the price as well. Thank you very much. How are you as a sort of contractor, how are you sort of beginning to kind of make sense of all that? Because, I mean, that almost sounds like an unfair challenge, Malcolm. How do you do it?
No, yeah, it is totally unfair. No, but that is what we should be doing. If we're providing a good product for our customers, it should include all of those aspects. You wouldn't go and buy a washing machine and expect it to only wash your clothes. It needs to be serviceable. It needs to be green in its in the energy usage. It needs to last and so on. And it's the same with building projects. There's so many aspects that our customers and like yourselves want. And why shouldn't you? So what we have to do as an industry is to be better at design, better at constructing, understanding the whole carbon agenda and how we can support those targets. But also there's social responsibility and working with local people and supporting local economies. And all of that, when you put all into context, is actually what we're all trying to do. And working together as a team, and I think one of the key things is collaboration. The industry has been talking about this back since the 90s with Latham. But what we have now is a real need to collaborate even better than we've ever had before, partly because we can't go and meet people and we can't see them at the drop of a hat. And now we're doing it electronically, we're talking to people better, and hopefully, as a result of that, certainly our experience has been seeing better performance on all fronts. And that's where true collaboration is suddenly, people are starting to get that message.
Well, I think what we'll do now, Malcolm, if we can, is we'll play a little bit of music and then we'll come back in part two and we'll just talk about something that you've called the road to recovery in terms of how construction can bounce back from COVID and learn from COVID and take the positives moving forward. So stay on the line if you can. And what we'll do is we'll play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
105.9 Academy FM.
Biz Connect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. We are delighted to have Ben Sherrard with us today in the studio from Kent County Council, and also Malcolm Clark, Managing Director of Baxalt Construction, on the phone with us at the moment. Malcolm, thanks for being with us today.
A pleasure.
Lovely to have you with us. We were talking before the break. We were starting to get into something that you've termed as the road to recovery in terms of construction and how construction and the construction industry emerges from COVID, hopefully, in the not too distant future. But just talk to us, if you can, in your own words about, you know, some of the key points that kind of underpin that.
Yeah, the key to this whole recovery from what we're going through at the moment, which seems to be endless, but at some point we will look back in history and say, do you remember? But the opportunity that the industry has as we come out of this to develop its business model, to change its attitude to what real value is and deliver better value, better quality, linking that to things such as social value and the support that our customers really do crave for, if for want of another word, but another description. But life has changed for a lot of us, but also our thinking has. And I think the ability for us to collaborate more readily and to understand what each other can contribute to a better outcome is a real key way of moving forward. If you look at some of the things that are happening outside of our industry, where there have been successes, we now need to convert that into our own and make it happen. Mm. And that will give us more sustainable business in the first place, but the ability to invest in innovation and developing what we do, new methods of construction, but also linking that to to be more greener, to support the reduction in carbon across across the economy, and then there's the final piece, which I think is as important, if not most important, is developing our young people and giving opportunities. I mean, for once, the construction industry is quite a good place to be working at the moment. And really taking that opportunity to demonstrate to the youngsters how much they can contribute to the built environment.
Mm. And at the heart of all of this, I guess ultimately, and Ben touched on it in the first part of the show, is better communication and a much more kind of, collaborative approach on that front as well. You know, banging heads, you know, getting people around a table at the start of a project perhaps, and just you know, working through the best ways of doing things.
Absolutely. It's that early engagement, being open and honest with each other, understanding what stakeholders really want, and then supporting that. We've had too long a period of people sitting in their own camps and just worried about what they're doing and not really thinking about anybody else. And these projects, as we were talking about in the first part, they're incredibly complex. There's a whole range of requirements and aspirations and targets that need to be met. And you can't do that by just trying to shovel the responsibility and the risk down the line to the lowest common denominator. You have to put it in the right place, put the risk in a place where it's best managed, and then support each other to deliver the best solution.
And share that risk ultimately, I guess.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah. And I mean that to me kind of harks of better productivity all round as well, because I guess it's fair to say that traditionally the construction industry has been incredibly tightly squeezed on a kind of margin level, and we know that there's been some fairly high profile failures in the kind of construction industry over the last couple of years, improved productivity, better communication, all of that ultimately should result in a better industry all round.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we've been banging on about it for some time now, but I stopped talking quite so much about it some years ago and said, well, let's actually show people what can be achieved. And it's been a journey for us, so the last 7 or 8 years particularly, where we've taken new thinking, new ideas, and turned rhetoric into practical conclusion that's increased our efficiency so much so that our margins are better. We're still doing it for the same price as everybody else, but we're cutting out the waste and making it more sustainable, and that thinking is where you can really start to make a change. There is so much that is wasted in our industry, and it's not just materials, it's in resource on site, it's in the design process, in the pricing and all sorts of areas such as that. And it's now when you start to really analyse it and you pull it all together, you go, this is massive opportunity. One of my concerns is that we'll have outside disruptors that will come in, recognise that our industry generally has been pretty poorly run for some decades now and a broken business model, and that they could turn an Amazon or a Google could turn our industry into something that will be good for them, but not for the industry as a whole. And actually, why shouldn't we be doing that ourselves? Let's get out there and show what can be done and disrupt the industry ourselves by demonstrating better practice, better efficiency, reduction in waste, and all the positives that we've already discussed.
I think again, Malcolm, sort of client side, I wouldn't want to sort of judge too harshly anyone who or any organisation that has kind of battened down the hatches and kind of receded to a more contractual position at the moment, because it is rough out there. It has been a tough old sort of 12, 18 months, 2 years. But I said in the first segment a little while ago that any success that I think KCC have seen over the last year, and I include in that the fact that, in September just gone, not one child went without a school place that was required for them. And that is a massive success given the disruption that our programme suffered. The success that we have had has been down to the way we have worked with our supply chain. And that change of approach is really what has been the breeding ground for that success. So whilst I absolutely wouldn't judge anyone harshly for acting sort of more contractually in the current climate, the real success that we've had has been with that more collaborative approach, and where we get round, you know, the hypothetical table, and we talk all the issues you mentioned a moment ago, we talk them through together and we resolve them together. That's where that success has come from.
Absolutely. And actually, this is where we need to make sure this road to recovery needs to take those lessons learned, that new thinking, that new ideas, the demonstration of collaborative working, and hold on to that and take that forward, and make that even better going forward. And the contractual side of it and the legal side of it that sort of evolved, that one of the things in the road to recovery, we must not get into that old habit of who do we beat up, and how do we push the risk onto someone else, and not manage it together and try and come up with a solution that actually it ultimately ends up saving money rather than increasing delay and frustration and all the other things that come out of adversarial approaches to working. And collaboration is the key, and those that are doing it and get it right and work together on it will are proving it. As I said earlier, it is about proving it and providing the evidence rather than just saying, you know, moaning and groaning about what's going on.
And as you say, also, you know, investing in young people, investing in, you know, attracting more women into the construction industry at the same time. So, you know, there's an exciting future there, isn't there? Malcolm, we've run out of time, very sadly. It's been absolutely fabulous to have you on to give us a sort of bird's eye view, if you like, from the from the main kind of contractor side of the relationship, the client relationship. Thank you so much for joining us today. I think what we'll do is we'll probably have another construction follow-up later on in the year, and I'd be delighted if you could join us again then. But for now, Malcolm, thank you so much, and it's been great to have you.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back again, everybody, and thank you so much for staying with the Biz Connect radio show this afternoon. I'm delighted to say that we've now got John Reed on the line from the DDS Group. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Martin. Hi.
Lovely to have you with us today. John, obviously we've got a very kind of construction themed show today. Just tell us a little bit about DDS Group and where you fit in terms of the construction industry.
Of course. Well, DDS Group is made up of three core services, effectively. We promote ourselves to offer a turnkey solution, literally from the moment we go in, with DDS Environmental, who deliver a licensed asbestos removal, DDS Demolition, who've been active for over 40 years, demolishing all types of structures, steel mills, power stations and things. And most recently, the last 3 years, the development of DDS Contracting, where we move into enabling works and groundworks across commercial, industrial, residential infrastructure. In the background, or on a slightly smaller scale, the group includes DDS Reclamation, who obviously salvage demolition material, recycle it and reuse it. And we have DDS Building Supplies, who look after the more local building requirements around the Thanet area.
Yeah.
On top of that, we have really strong affiliations with our sister company, TW Services. They have a substantial recycling facility in Thanet. Soil washing plant, where they're able to generate recycled aggregates for building the building industry, and most recently they've the addition of their ready mix concrete plant, which generates concrete supply again through the southeast area. So we've got a very strong and focused supply chain support across a broad range of services.
Because I mean, reclamation is really important, isn't it? I guess on two levels. I mean, I live locally in Thanet as well, and yeah. I remember your reclamation yard used to be based in, is it Monkton?
Yep, that's correct.
And you've moved up to near Manston now, haven't you? In fact, I drove past you yesterday, funnily
enough. We have our main offices, our main group offices are along the Manston Road, yes. Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it's like an Aladdin's cave in there, because you can, you know, you can visit your reclamation yard and you've got these wonderful old chimney pots and wrought iron gates. You've got all sorts of stuff that the public can actually just pop in and buy effectively as a recycled item.
Exactly that. Obviously, more aged building features, and there's quite a lot of it externally and internally, things like old sundials and water baths and all types of things.
Yeah.
Just really random material, but it's all reusable. It's all got a value.
Yeah, yeah. But also importantly, you know, when you're removing things like concrete from, you know, sites that you're kind of brought in to clear, there is a certain. Am I right in thinking there is a percentage of materials that go into new construction sites that have to have been recycled? Is that right?
Absolutely. It is more prevalent these days. Try and use recycled products. They've got to be certified, they've got to be graded and certified properly, which obviously the wash plant at TW Services deal with, but certainly there's a much greater move towards reducing the carbon footprint and whole life cost of buildings by recycling and reusing product.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you work very much in the world of what I call big boys' toys. it's fair to say. When I think about sort of demolition, my earliest experience of demolition was, bless him, good old Fred Dibner.
Yes, of course.
You know, walking around the kind of industrial heartland of the north, being commissioned to bring down these enormous sort of chimney stacks and cooling towers and things like that. And of course, what he used to do was chisel out a few bricks, light a fire, and wait for the thing to fall down.
Incredible character, absolutely. I think things have moved on a little bit since then. Health and safety plays a fairly massive part in what we do.
Yeah. and I guess the challenge of that today, again, and, you know, again, this is a common theme of the show today, is about, you know, doing all of that important work in a safe way, in a COVID-safe way.
Absolutely.
On site. So I guess that's been a huge challenge for you guys.
It is. It's been a challenging time. I mean, a lot of our teams work together in small support bubbles anyway. And obviously, we followed the CLC guidelines throughout the process. We're very much on board with that type of regulation as it changes. So many more layers of protection, so many more type of rules and regulations. But in the industry, we've always had to deal with those. So it's easier to deal with because we're used to having to work with those constraints to a certain extent.
Just tell us a little bit about your speciality, John, because it's very much in the sort of groundworks and civils side of the business at DDS. So just you know, in layman's terms, what exactly are we talking about here?
Well, we've benefited from a lot of early type of involvement since I started the contracting side, where we type of try and step in and look literally from day one at the design while the engineers are working on it, look at ways in which we can question and review and try and give the client better value by the time it actually comes to start on site. A lot of those intricacies have been dealt with in the most cost-effective way. So it's been great for us to, again, on the back of the introduction through demolition and asbestos removal, we're already there. We're type of nosing around at the gate, if you like. And so there have been several projects since our inception where we have literally gone from the demolition asbestos into enabling and onto groundworks. The client builds a trust in us as we move through the process, and there's an easy, smooth transition because we're all involved in the management of the process.
So that could be anything from, you know, waste disposal through to, you know, bringing utilities into site and you guys having a sort of ground level view on the best way to do that, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, a project which we were involved in with Canterbury Prison demolition not so long ago, the client had had to get his ducks in a row with the main contractor for a £60 million build. It was taking time to get all that underway, so we went through asbestos removal and demolition. We then offered the client the opportunity to roll with us to do the enabling works package. So at the point that the main contractor was agreed and finally the order was placed, he rolled straight into site and got working straight away. It saved that downtime. We made use of the overlap, and we built an incredible relationship with the client team. And they come back to us now to work directly. Mm. Again, so collaboration, trusted relationships, and getting involved early with transparency, it makes the difference.
So you mentioned Canterbury Prison there. Mm. Is that that's the old prison site, is it, as you come down into town, into Canterbury?
Exactly that.
So what's actually on that site, or what is going to be on that site now then?
It's built. There's a new college building, Christchurch College building, which I think is mainly for medical. Uh-huh. Teaching. It's a vast new development. Mm. But at the time, it was a very restrictive site. Obviously, we have the rest of the colleges around it.
Plus, yes, because it's right next door anyway, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. A lot of archaeology early doors. Very interesting site for archaeology, too.
I bet that makes life challenging at times as well, does it? Especially around places like Canterbury.
Very much so.
Gosh.
Very much so.
And I guess it's your responsibility, is it, to bring somebody like a consultant like that on, very early, as soon as you start to make a hole in the ground, I guess?
Literally from the day that the first shovel or the first bucket goes in the ground, we have to have a watching brief. It is, you've got to get all your team lined up to be able to move efficiently before you even walk through the gate.
Mm. And would that be your responsibility as a subcontractor, for example, in this instance, or would that be down to the main contractor to organise as well?
It was actually set up by the client, but we're under the constraint of having to make sure that we are compliant.
Mm.
And it can be disruptive at times. You can pull a lump of material off the site and the archaeologist gets you to stop. You can work somewhere else while they go through things. But depending on how much archaeology is there, the whole site can come to a standstill while they do their investigation. So it's, when you're in a type of a good partnership, these types of things are accepted and you work around them as best you can.
Mm-hmm. It just shows you how quickly things progress, though, you know, despite all of that. I mean, I haven't driven down that road into Canterbury probably for, you know, the best part of, you know, a year now.
Uh-huh.
And you're telling me that the old building's gone and the new one's up.
Absolutely. I mean, all of the prison walls are down.
Yeah.
And there is a vast new building in place.
That's incredible. Yeah. Mm. Fantastic. John, I think what we're going to do now, we're going to play a little bit of music.
Yep.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk about this kind of idea of collaboration in a bit more detail. And perhaps, using a practical example, which I know the three of you on the show today have been involved with, and that's Lenham School. So, we'll play a little bit of music and we'll be straight back after this.
No problem, thank you. 105.9
Academy FM. Biz Connect. Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world. Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm delighted to say we've got John Reed with us at the moment from DDS Group. John, lovely to have you with us today.
Indeed, Martin, and you. Nice to see you.
We've had a sort of a common theme today in terms of, collaboration and how, you know, clients and main contractors and subcontractors all kind of work together ultimately to come up with, the best solution for a client.
Mm.
We also talked at the beginning of the show about, you know, the government's target of building 300,000 new homes annually and the challenge of doing that on brownfield as opposed to, you know, always greenfield sites. But I guess, you know, remediation of land is an important kind of area that you guys get involved with as well in order to help facilitate that.
Very much early doors, with so much brownfield now being wanted to be utilised, obviously, and through our evolution from the demolition, initial demolition works, getting involved early to look at the ground conditions and being able to advise. There's so many options available at that early point in time, but some are far more costly than others, and having a better understanding straight off the bat tends to give the client team a better advantage of getting the work done down the line.
Mm. So does that involve you guys getting involved on site, as it were, early on as part of the tendering process? When a main contractor comes to you, for example, and says, you know, we need this building dismantling, we need this land remediating, are you involved in the tendering process directly at that point?
Generally, these days there is a bit more of a sea change towards getting top of collaboration, getting teams on board early.
Mm, mm.
it all comes down really to that initial investigation. I mean, with the greatest will in the world, we can look at a site, we can make assumptions, but until there's some physical soil investigation, some analysis of the ground and what needs to be done with it and what it can take in terms of its bearing capacity and things like that, that really triggers the whole process.
Because you're working on a project, I believe, at the moment in Maidstone. Just tell us a little bit about that. It's
quite interesting case study. The moment South East Water have got some issues around their reservoirs at Aylesford. The ground conditions are very variable. There's been, I think it's been in the press quite a bit, there's been some holes open up in the ground, sinkholes effectively, and wash out. We initially, the demolition side of the business, were asked to go in and look at the tanks with a view to demolishing them, because they were literally teetering on the edge of some statue sinkholes. So we worked in with the client. We mobilised very quickly, and effectively, what we've done is we're working with the South East team to remediate the ground around and below the tanks. And get them back into service as soon as possible. Very challenging at this particular moment in time with the resources where they are. But again, it's very much open book, very transparent, and we're constantly involved in Zoom meetings with the engineers team, with my team on site, myself and the client, to get the solutions together and get them functional and operational as quickly as possible.
I think it's Ben here, John, from KCC's point of view. There's not a project that I can remember where ground condition wasn't the gremlin that kept me awake at night. It's you know, it is where the costly risks are, and it is where the risks that you don't know about in advance come from.
Yes.
And I think from a client point of view, that whole you know, come back to again, collaboration between main contractor, supply chain, design team and client, the more good quality information that I as a client can get hold of earlier on in the process, the better my decision making is going to be. So that ability to have that earlier on through the design is potentially going to save me and, you know, by extension the taxpayer, quite a lot of money if we get it right. And I think that early engagement is where that comes from.
All the risks are in the ground. You know, once you get above ground level, you have BIM, you have digital mastering of designs, you have a way that you can actually run through that entire process and to a certain extent fully understand how that goes together. All the variables are below ground. So the earlier that you establish the risk, talk to industry professionals, and look at every way possible to mitigate cost. If you do that front end, then you will dramatically reduce that risk.
Ben and I were talking earlier, John, about Manston, and you know, ultimately, you know, whether it remains as an airport, you know, with River Oak, or whether it actually, you know, becomes an enormous estate, you know, under the sort of Stonehill Park. Brand, and you know, there's an awful lot of talk about what's buried beneath the tarmac there, isn't there, for example, if you were to start building housing, you know, in terms of oil over the years, you know, from aircraft and everything else.
Indeed. With the site of that size, there are plenty of techniques out there where you can establish some of your parameters early. It's not so much with that type of site where it's the ground conditions. It is, as you say, the variables which are generally introduced by man. Hawkinge aerodrome pipe bombs, you know, back in the day, the whole of the old aerodrome site was linked with pipe bombs in case it was invaded. So they're still digging them up, or have been digging them up over the last few years as they develop out around Hawkinge. It's things we put in the ground. That causes the risk later on.
And I mean, what amazes me is just how sophisticated, you know, the whole land remediation process can be now, to the point where, you know, you will actually wash, you know, tens of thousands of tons of soil before it kind of goes back down in on site, as it were.
Absolutely. I mean, when you've got some of the bigger sites, some of the old power station sites, where the ground is so badly contaminated, you've got no choice but to look at clean cover systems, because it's not cost viable to actually dig it all up and take it away. The cost of treatment these days are incredibly high. But technologies have moved on. There are ways to encapsulate. There are ways to seal it in itself. And again, clean cover systems with more inert material over the top. Again, unless you get into these conversations with industry supply chain people who actually have done it, then it's all prevarication. So the sooner the client, when he has these sites, can to engage with the right people, the sooner the solutions come.
Yeah, so important to get the right expertise in early. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, another theme of today is it's been all about the environment and sustainability and where we kind of go with that. Where do you see your industry kind of moving towards in terms of a more sustainable kind of proposition?
We've got to do something about what we produce, our manufacturing processes, obviously, to make them as efficient as possible. Mm. We're on the cusp now of seeing electrically powered machines, believe it or not. We've been beating ourselves up for years with Euro 3, Euro 4, Euro 5 emission things with our diggers and God knows what. But there is more of that coming. The more use of recycled material, trying to find ways to put it back in the ground, get it accepted as suitable and putting it back in the ground. Where the opportunity arises, recycled concrete. It is usable. It is used in the country. It's got to be acceptable under a specification. But again, there are so many things where we can recycle and reuse these days, and that needs to be developed further.
I was at the Future Build exhibition up at Excel last March, literally just before we went into lockdown.
Yeah.
And the Concrete Centre were there, and they were talking about their innovation that's coming down the pipe with regard to concrete products. And it's just amazing, really, isn't it? The speed at which innovation is kind of driving the market today. It's a very exciting space to be in.
It is, and all the time that you have the input from seasoned professionals into those requirements, if you like, you're getting the best of it. I mean, one of the most critical things we face is our skill shortage, we need to focus on utilising the past skills or the skills that our older individuals in the industry have before they shuffle off into retirement.
Yeah.
Once it's gone, it's lost, I can't exaggerate enough about how important it is to get that skill passed down into the junior members of the team.
I think that's absolutely right. I could present you with almost any problem, and I might think that it's the first time this problem has ever happened, but I can pretty much guarantee you or someone you know will have faced that problem or something very similar in the past, and will know how to deal with it. And again, we keep hitting back onto this. It's having those conversations and making sure the lines of communication are open, because someone will know how to solve the problem.
It is communication. But one of my old college lecturers once told me that the people that know what they're doing, if they don't know the answer, they always know where to look. Now, whether that's someone you know, or whether that's going to a book, or whether it's putting it into Google these days, which is a much more powerful tool, at the end of the day, it's there, but by communication, you can find it quicker.
And as you say, again, Malcolm was echoing this as well. We need to invest in the next generation of young people coming into the industry.
Totally.
and making sure that those skills aren't lost. So, yeah. John, it's been brilliant to have you with us today. And just give us a quick shout out for DDS Group. How can we get in touch with you? What's the best way to get in touch with you guys?
Best contact number, which is the main office, is 01843 821 555. There are a number of options there. I think contracting is option 3, demolition option 1. But it's a centralized type of switchboard. So that's the best way forward. We're here to help, and we've got a broad range of skill sets we can apply to the problem.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great to have you on.
You're welcome. It's been great. Thank you very much for your time.
And we'll catch up with you again soon, I'm sure.
No worries, Martin. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Cheers, bye.
Well, I'm sure you'll agree we've had another action-packed show today. We had some fabulous guests with us. Ben Sherard from Kent County Council. We've had Malcolm Clark from Baxel Construction. And we've just been talking to John Reed at DDS Group. We will be back in a couple of weeks' time on the 1st of February at our usual time of 2 o'clock. But I've just got time before we close to tell you about an event that's happening on Friday, the 22nd of January. That's at 9:30 in the morning. It's being run by our good friends Oasis. That's Operational Accounting Systems, and they are running a reverse VAT charge seminar. So this will be a virtual event that they're running. You can find the details on their website, the booking details. There is an Eventbrite link there. That's Oasis. That's o-a-sys.co.uk. Reverse VAT charge seminar, Friday the 22nd of Jan at 9:30. It's also on our website, the supplymobusiness.co.uk website, on our community page. But for now, thank you so much for joining us. And that is the end of another show. And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time. Bye for now.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.